bringing Seattle to the world and the world to Seattle. I'm your host, Lori Ness, a soldier on the front line of the mainstream. You can listen to this and other shows at northwestprime.com. And be sure to stay with Seattle Wave Radio 24/7, 365 for more great music and interviews. We're starting a movement of kindness, and we want you to join us. Let's get this show started.
Well, I promised when I found great music, I would bring it to you, and today is no exception to that. There is a fantastic CD that's going to drop and be available August 13th by Paul Spear. It is called Axe Inferno, A-X Inferno, like X for the guitar, and it is a guitar instrumental album that will blow your mind. And Paul is very successful. He has two Emmys. He's a Grammy-nominated musician and producer, and he's going to talk us through that album today, and I want to introduce you guys to it and introduce you to Paul. He's from this area, the Pacific Northwest. He's living in Memphis now, home of the blues. And thanks, Paul, for coming on.
Hey, it's great to be here, Lori.
Oh, we're thrilled to have you. How long have you been working on this album?
Well, I think the first ideas came about maybe 3 years ago, and just kind of slowly worked on that. The first track I did was Accelerator, and I wanted to do kind of an experiment using influences from like trance and electronic dance music, that kind of thing. So I did Accelerator, put it up on my YouTube channel, and asked the folks there for feedback, because it was a little bit different than what they're used to hearing, and the response was just overwhelmingly positive. So that kind of gave me the confidence to move on and create the rest of the album.
So it started with Accelerator, oddly enough, and then it accelerated from there.
I guess you could say that, yeah.
And now I want to tell everyone that they can go to paulspear.com, and there's all the information is on there, and I think they can even preview some of the or most of the music from that point, and then it's on YouTube as well. So some of this was fan-driven. You were able to communicate back and forth with the fans and kind of tweak it as you went along.
Well, Not really. Once I got that positive response on Accelerator, then I just kind of went back into my cave and did the rest of the album, and I didn't really expose any of the tracks as I was working on them. This is actually my 14th album, so I know my way around the studio, and I just kept letting the ideas flow. And And I have to please myself, number one. And that's why if you feel like, the tracks on this album took me 3 years to create, but I wanted each one to be one that I really loved. And so I'm real proud of this record in that respect, and that I'll play any track on there for anyone and go, yeah, I like this one. Of course, people are asking me, what's your favorite track? And, I really can't pick one out.
Right. I would imagine that it would be the same like saying, which child is your favorite, because they're all kind of special in their own way. They each have their own little personality and their own nuances, which makes them unique and individual in their own way.
Exactly.
Well, let's talk about your experience, because you are no stranger. This isn't your first rodeo, so to speak. You have worked with some of the most brilliant minds in music. You started out here in the Northwest. You went to the University of Idaho, and then you ended up in L.A., I think, and then over to Seattle and worked with, all of the greats in Seattle, and now you're in Memphis. So let's kind of work our way through your journey that's led you to where you are right now. You started playing the trumpet when you were 12, right? But then you put it down and went to the guitar.
I was nine. Nine years old.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you come from a musical family?
Yeah. Both my parents play keyboards, organ and piano. And my dad has always been a kind of a hi-fi buff. And so there was always good quality sound in our house. And in our living room, we had both a baby grand piano and an organ. My dad, in fact, he's a pretty handy guy, and he built our first guitar amplifiers out of old stereo equipment.
Wow.
And they didn't really sound very good, but they were kind of big and they looked cool. So, that was fun.
And so did they encourage you to take up the trumpet at first, or was that your idea?
Well, it was kind of my idea. It was fourth grade, and that's when they came around and said, who wants to be in the school band? And one of my friends who was already playing trumpet was in the school band. He said, yeah, come on, why don't you go rent a trumpet at the local music store and come and be in the school band? Well, the school band was like five trumpet players, a girl that played flute, and I think a guy that played clarinet. That was the band. So it really wasn't a band. What it turned into more was like you'd have a few minutes with the teacher to learn a little bit about your instrument. But after the 3-month rental was up, I didn't really like the trumpet so much, and somehow guitar flashed in my mind, and my mom took me to the local music store and bought a brand called a Stella, which is a 3/4 size guitar that cost $19, and I still have it. And
wow.
And then I took private lessons on that, and both my brothers were learning to play as well. My younger brother on drums and piano, and my older brother on guitar as well. And so by the time I was 11, we had a band. And then when I was 12, we actually played our first paid gig, that pretty well hooked me from there.
I would imagine, because, 12 years old and you have a band and you had a first paid gig, I would think that you would get the fever or the bug at that point then, because, you had, people were paying, you must have had, some type of audience there.
It was interesting, probably one of the most unusual gigs that I've ever played in my life, and being the first one where we actually made money. It was a swim and dance party that a neighbor kid convinced the local radio station to throw at the public pool on a Saturday night. And, he said, I got these guys in my neighborhood. They've got this band and they're killer, and they should play at the swim and dance party, and you can spin records, and we'll all make some money. And they went for it. And, our band made $65. And this was back, 1964, 65. I came away with that with, this pile of $1 bills, and my friends thought I was cool, and girls thought I was cool. It's like, I was hooked, and there was never turning back.
That would do it. Well, as any of us know who are 12 years old, that is a big gig when you're 12 years old. There is no hipper, hotter place than the pool during summer. So I'm going to play Accelerator. I want people to have that in their mind. They think about this 12-year-old kid. He started with the trumpet for a couple months. That didn't work. He decides to pick up the guitar. His first gig's at the pool during the summer. And this is what that kid has done today. So I'm going to play Accelerator, and we will be right back with Paul Spear. the genius work of our guest today, Paul Spear, and he has a new album out, a guitar instrumental that was Accelerator off of his Axe Inferno album that's going to be out on August 13th. You can find out more at paulspear.com. And so Paul's joining us today, and we're taking a musical journey with him through this album that is just fantastic. It's just a feast for the ears. Anybody who enjoys music, especially guitar music, can super appreciate this album. So we're back with Paul, and that, like I said, was Accelerator. And the next song we're going to play when we go to our next break, I think. Did we decide on Megatron?
Yes. Megatron.
Great. Okay. So we're going to play Megatron when we go to our next break, but we're going to catch up with Paul. So Paul then, so we kind of told you about him. He was 12 years old, living in Lewiston, Idaho, and he starts with his trumpet and goes to the guitar, and you see where that led. And he goes to the University of Idaho, and then he gets over into the music on the West Coast. He gets into really the hotbed of the music scene at that time. He starts working with the great, and now he's one of the greats. 2 Emmys, Grammy nod. This album is certainly Grammy caliber work. I wouldn't be surprised at all if we see it come up for Grammy nomination as well. So tell us, Paul, about kind of getting over to the West Side and then working with some of the people that you worked with, and what was that like for somebody from Lewiston, Idaho?
Well, of course, it's great. I've been fortunate that in addition to being a successful recording artist, I've been a successful record producer as well. And I had a studio in Seattle for 25 years and did, well over 200 albums while I was there. In fact, I've lost count. It's probably closer to 300 these days, but worked with a lot of very talented people, a lot of people you've never heard of, but made some excellent albums. But along the way, like David Lawns and I met in 1981, originally to do corporate soundtrack work and commercials and stuff. We'd make some money doing that, and then on the side, we started working on our own solo projects as recording artists. And he released his very first solo piano album called Heart Sounds, which I produced. And shortly after that, I released a collection, 983 Spectral Voyages, and that was my first solo project. And that was on the Katero Records from San Francisco, who unfortunately no longer exists, but it was great to get signed to be able to put out my first album. And then, of course, David and I worked together for, like the next 18, 19 years, I think. Did three very successful albums for the Narada label in the 80s and 90s, and two of them were tied to nature videos that we created with our production company in Seattle, and those sold like hotcakes at the time. And so very proud of that work, and still I have a bunch of them up on my YouTube channel, and people are still commenting, going, "Oh yeah, I remember this, and I need it on DVD, and my VHS tape won't work anymore," that kind of thing. And so, very happy that the work back in those days still has legs and still has fans.
Definitely. Well, a lot of this music is just absolutely timeless, and good music is good music. It'll be good music 50 years from now, 100 years from now. People will keep coming back to it over and over and over again, and that's what they're going to find with this Axe Inferno album and much of your work up to this point. And you also worked with Scott Rockenfeld, from the drummer from Queensryche, which everybody around here knows Queensryche, and they're still performing today.
In fact, they they kind of had a regrouping there, and the new band just recently released an album that is just getting fantastic reviews. And I actually did have Queensryche in my studio for a project several years ago, so I have worked with them. But Scott and I met through a mutual friend, an engineer, at one of the Seattle studios, and we started talking. It turns out that he was a fan of the work that I was doing with David Lawns, and of course I was a fan of Queensryche. You know, I thought they were a terrific band, and so we started hanging out. And of course, the inevitable happens. Say, well, what about working together? Maybe we can do something. And we've still had Miramar Productions going in Seattle at the time, which was a partnership with David Lawns, Jan Nickman, the director. And we talked to the folks at Miramar that were running the company and said, hey, Scott and I'd like to do a project. And they said, okay, let's do a video album. And that project turned out to be Televoid, which was a computer animation. And then we scored all the music for that. And that's the project that got nominated for a Grammy.
Well, and that techno music is so popular right now, and it's just being infused into everything. And you were really on the front end of that. What was making you at that time think in those terms?
Oh, you mean like the music from Televoid?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that project wasn't really influenced so much by the techno stuff. In fact, just about everything on there is live playing, which is different from techno music, where it's very computer based. You know, Scott, of course, is a you know, one of the best rock drummers in the world, and mm-hmm. all the drums are live. And we just kind of wanted to do a futuristic sort of sound with that, and we were very proud of the way that turned out. And then a couple of years later, we decided we wanted to do just a music album, and so we got together and recorded Hell's Canyon. And Hell's Canyon is just upriver from Lewiston, so it was kind of like I'd been there so many times growing up, and it's got this rich history. And I thought, well, this would be kind of a neat concept for an album. And Scott and I had written maybe three or four pieces, but didn't really have a concept to glue everything together. And that idea of Hell's Canyon came up, and I presented it to Scott, and he really liked it. And I said, okay, here's the thing. We can look at places in the canyon and historical events and sort of create a soundtrack for a movie that doesn't exist. And so it came together like that, and that's a record that still sells and getting airplay and that kind of thing. So,
Well, and people will probably remember that Evel Knievel tried to jump over Hell's Canyon back in the day, unsuccessfully.
No, that wasn't Hell's Canyon. That was the Snake River Canyon.
Oh, it was
down
Snake
by
River
Twin
Canyon.
Falls. Yeah, Hell's Canyon, there'd be no way. You know, Hell's Canyon is so big. It's the deepest gorge in North America. It's deeper than the Grand Canyon. But the Snake River Canyon is down by Twin Falls. And that's the same river, of course. It's the Snake River. But it's several hundred miles away from Hell's Canyon.
So it starts up in the Hell's Canyon and runs down through Idaho?
Well, I believe the source of the Snake River is in Wyoming. And then it runs through southern Idaho and then to Hell's Canyon down to Lewiston and then heads west and empties into the Columbia River in the Tri-Cities.
Oh, okay. Beautiful country.
A little geography lesson there.
Well, especially from someone now who's living all the way in Memphis. Do you miss
Memphis,
Seattle?
Memphis, Tennessee. What's that?
Memphis, Tennessee, home of the blues.
And birthplace of rock and roll. That's the
right.
Monikers that they.
That's right.
That they have.
So what's the music scene like in Memphis versus Seattle? What's the difference in the vibe, or is there one?
Well, it's a good music scene here. It's very much like it always has been in that R&B and soul, and of course these days hip hop are really big, as is blues and that kind of thing. You know, they have the International Blues Challenge here every January, where blues bands from all over the world come to compete, and it's a week long event that gets a lot of attention, and it's a really big deal. There's blues bands from Sweden and Italy, places where you wouldn't think there would be blues bands, but they come, and I haven't heard all of them, but I understand some of them are just awesome.
Mm-hmm. Did you find it easy to transition into that music scene coming from Seattle?
Well, yeah, pretty much, because I've been involved with the Grammy Awards for a really long time. In fact, I was one of the founders of the Pacific Northwest chapter, and I served as the first president. And so there's a Grammy chapter here in Memphis, and soon after we moved here, I was elected to the Board of Governors. And, those meetings and then the events that the chapter puts on, you get to meet everybody in the area that's doing major work in music, and so I've got connected to the scene here quite fast through the Grammy chapter.
I'm sure they were glad to have you.
Well, because of the experience. I've been a member a long time. In fact, I first joined in 1982. There was no chapter in Seattle, and so I was a member of the San Francisco chapter. And then it was like late 90s we were able to found our own chapter for the Pacific Northwest, and we have a full-time office in Seattle. And that was great to get that going. And now they're putting on a lot of terrific events there that it just helps. It helps the community, helps the music community come together and grow. And I know that any of the cities that have Grammy chapters, it really makes a huge difference in the music scene there.
Definitely, and they're also really into giving back as well. And I've seen the Grammy chapters be very active in the schools and to Musicians Aid and helping out music programs just in general, since a lot of it's been cut out of the school system. It's probably not as prevalent as when you were back in elementary school. A lot of schools don't even have music programs anymore.
Right, and that's a real shame because it's a scientific fact that music really helps a person learn and understand other things, and so it's really a shame. And but that people like the Grammys and VH1 has had some great efforts there to keep the music alive in the schools. But the thing about the Grammys is I'm glad you mentioned some of these things that the organization does outside of the awards, because most people, that's all they know is the Grammy Awards. And of course, any award show, people are going to have a problem with it. And so I don't even try to defend the show and the awards process. We do it as good as we possibly can. And not everybody sees their favorite artist get a Grammy. But what's nice is the money that's made from the broadcast, it goes back into these music programs in schools and Music Cares, which is the one that helps people in the music business that have had rough times, medical problems that they can't pay for, things like that. They come in and they are doing some great work with the money that's made from the broadcast.
Yeah, because not every musician is making millions and millions of dollars. Most of them are just hardworking and, you know, just like the rest of us, but you only see the ones that are making, you know, the few that are making the millions and millions of dollars, but it's not like that for everybody.
Right, right.
All right, we're going to play Megatron, and then we're going to come right back with Paul Spear, and this is off his Axe Inferno album that will be out on August 13th. You can find more at paulspear.com. This is Megatron. We'll be back in just a moment. Eternal album by Paul Spear. We're talking to Paul today, and that is going to be available on the 13th of August, and you can find more at paulspear.com. We were just talking when we were off air while you guys were listening to Megatron about how Paul has been collaborating with people all over the world through the internet and Skype, and music has just really changed, and now these great minds don't have to meet in a single place anymore. They can collaborate right over the internet and turn out the most amazing work. And Paul's been working with people all over the world, from Manchester, UK, to France, to all over the United States. And you met some people on MySpace, didn't you, Paul? And you guys collaborated and made an album.
That's true. This would have been, I think, about 2008, when MySpace was still a going concern. And Paul Lawler from England friended me. And I really liked his music and complimented him on it. He does, you know, kind of progressive new age, you might call it, kind of fusion-y stuff. But it was really, really well written, well performed. And he suggested that we collaborate on an album. And by that time, you know, moving large files around the internet was starting to become commonplace. And so that's how we created it. And towards the end of the project, I had become friends with this woman in France, Satine Orient, who was a singer and keyboard player. And she had an album out, this sort of French dance pop material that was kind of cool. And I sent her a couple of mixes and said, hey, if you're inspired to do some vocals on these tunes, let me know. And she came back with this really, really neat vocal parts sung in French. And so we decided to put, you know, two versions of two of those songs on the album. You know, one's the vocal version, one's the instrumental version. And that record was called Wonders, which is like Wonders of the World. It was kind of a very kind of world fusion, you might say, in style. And so it's got titles like Ganges, Gobi, Petra, Tahoma. You know, these are, you know, places around the world that mm-hmm. are really cool. And
I've always wanted to go to Petra.
Yeah, that looks like an amazing place, for sure.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, but this was kind of following the same concept like Hell's Canyon, you know, where we wrote a soundtrack for a movie that doesn't exist.
Right. That's just amazing. Now, since then, you haven't met Paul, but you have met Satine.
Right. My wife and I were on a Mediterranean cruise last fall, which is fun. It's our second one we've done, and we love it. And one of the stops was in Monte Carlo, and Satine lives outside of Nice, which is just to the west of Monte Carlo. So she hopped on the train and came over for the afternoon, and we got to hang out and have lunch. And she's just a peach, and it was just so great to finally meet her 4 years later after making this record.
Yeah, I would imagine, because here you guys were in this virtual world, so to speak, but yet creating this fantastic music and then not even being in the same room to collaborate or to bounce or get the energy off of each other, but you were able to work through the internet and through Skype and through this file sharing and come up with basically the same effect that people used 20 years ago collaborating together in rooms. You were able to do that around the world and bring that same energy to the UK, to France, and to Tennessee.
Right, right. Well, this is how I've pretty much made records all my life for me. You know, I mean, it's different if you're working with a band. Then, of course, you're talking about the energy between the people in the band and getting a performance where the way I make records, it's more like abstract painting. You start with an idea and then start adding to it. And so with multi-track recording, what you do is you lay down, let's say, a drum groove, and then I put the guitar on another track and I start jamming, seeing what kind of ideas I can come up with. And so it's one little thing at a time, and it gets layered and layered and layered. And, Paul Lawler had been doing that for years. He's got more albums out than I do. So he works alone in the same way. So it was a really good fit.
Doing that with him. Is it lonely working like that?
No, not really. It's nice to, as a producer, if I'm producing an album, it's good to have that interaction. But I these days I don't produce much by choice. I'm just too tired of being in the trenches for every note that's recorded. And this was a conscious decision that I made upon the move to Memphis, is that I didn't want to start another commercial studio in a new city from scratch and produce as much. So I focused the outside work on just mixing and mastering. And, with the internet and a fast connection, you can move these large files, one or two gigs of audio files back and forth pretty easily. And the kind of system that I use, I can, if someone, they want to change in the mix that I'm doing for them long distance, it's very easy because the computer remembers everything that you've done, and then you can go in, call up the session, everything is exactly the way it was when you left it, make the change, print a new mix, email it to the client, and they would go from there. So I really like working that way. I always prefer to mix by myself anyway, for any of the records, because it can be time consuming and distracting if you have people sitting there in the sofa in the back of the room talking and carrying on and asking for things that are impossible.
Well, this album is absolutely amazing, and every single track on it is just as good as the track before. A lot of times in music, the front album will be better than the back end of the album, but not in this case. In this case, the back end of the album is just as fantastic as the front end of the album. So I want to tell people, you really need to get the whole album so you can get all these nuances that Paul's been talking about and all this mastering of music that he's done. Each one is just individually great. And if you pick and choose off of iTunes, just going and just getting one song or two songs, you're really missing a fantastic musical experience. This whole album has laid out from beginning to end. And so I really encourage everyone to not kind of cherry pick the songs, but get the entire album and just really enjoy the entire thing, because it is from front to back. It there's a lot of depth in this album.
Thank you. Appreciate the feedback. I've been from the people who received early copies. Gosh, I'm just so pleased. I'm getting feedback like that where they're saying, there's not a dog on this album. I like every track, and of course, as an artist, that's what I set out to do. I think that's probably why it took me 3 years to make this record. Well, I make music for me, number one. I want to make something that I like. And so each track I have to, be in love with. And, there's several that didn't make it on the album, stuff that's still sitting on the computer that just didn't blow my skirt up after a week. So I said, okay, well, I've spent a bunch of time on this, but it's just not happening. So moving on. But later on in the process, I reconnected with the guy that played drums on the album, Ron Krasinski. We used to play clubs together in L.A. in the 70s. and he was an amazing drummer back then, and he's even better now. And it turns out he moved to Nashville about 20 years ago, and he works out of Nashville now. And he's what you call a hired gun. You know, he's never been in a band, so to speak. He goes out as a sideman musician, but he is one of the best drummers I've ever worked with. I've been really lucky to work with, you know, people like Scott Rock and Mike DeRozier, who was Heart's original drummer. I've done some work with him back in Seattle, and then of course Ron Krasinski. But we reconnected, and I thought, well, hey, you know, I can do like I did on Wonders. I can do a couple different versions of these tunes. I can do a techno mix, and I can do a rock version and have Ron play. And plus there were two other tracks that he played on that really were asking for live drums. And I brought him over from Nashville, and we went into Ardent Studios here in Memphis, which is a very, very famous recording studio. We recorded his drums in the same room that ZZ Top did most of their albums in, and Stevie Ray Vaughan recorded in there, Joe Cocker, you know, got gold and platinum records all over the walls. So it's kind of an inspiring studio to work
Definitely.
In.
Definitely.
Yeah, but Ron, you know, Ron was the last thing to go on those tracks. I had, you know, played all the parts previously, and so he was the last thing to go on, which you know, kind of backwards in the way most people think records are made, you know, but like I said earlier, my work is like abstract painting, where I'm doing one little thing at a time, start with an idea, layer, and I prefer to put the drums on much later on in the process, because by that time then you know what you want, and it's more obvious to the drummer what's going to work, as opposed to being, say, one of the first things to go on.
Right. That's it's amazing that music is a small community as well too, and that, you know, you guys will keep running across each other, and you go down to Memphis and someone goes over to Nashville that you used to know in Seattle, and that community is still working together, even though it's fluid, you know, and people are constantly moving from, you know, Seattle, LA, and then, you know, all over the world really, and that you guys can still work together and run into each other and collaborate. Amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I thank Facebook for reconnecting with Ron, because I would Google him every once in a while, because I wanted to know you know, what he was doing, and nothing really came up. And then once I hooked up on Facebook, I plugged his name in there, and well, I got a hit. And
wow.
I sent a message and said, "Are you the same Ron Krasinski that's a drummer from L.A.?" And, you know, he wrote back, and the rest is history.
Wow, that's amazing. It's, you know, the power of the Internet. Well, Paul, I really appreciate that you were coming on today, and I'm going to let you pick what song we're going to go out to, so we can play Power Glide, Tornado Warning, or Vortex, and I'll let you pick.
I would like to hear Tornado Warning.
Okay.
And give you a little introduction on that. There are tornado sirens at the beginning and the end that I recorded in my backyard here in Memphis as tornadoes were heading our way. And
wow.
as a person that, you know, lived most of my life in the Pacific Northwest, we don't have tornadoes around there, but they get them here, and it is scary. It is really scary. And I thought, okay, I gotta channel this into some music, some of this anxiety about tornadoes, channel it into the music.
Wow, yeah, you know, if you don't live in that part of the country where you get tornadoes, it looks scary on TV. I could imagine that it must be even worse when you are actually right there in it.
Yeah, it really is. I haven't seen any face to face. But twice now, they've touched down within a couple of miles of our house, and it's nerve-wracking. And then you got the TV on, and the local stations. It's all this just weather people screaming for you to take cover. You know, it drives you nuts.
I would imagine. It would look scary on TV. So that's the introduction for Tornado Warning, and you just heard how Paul came up with this, and we're going to play out on Tornado Warning. Axe Inferno is the name of the album. It'll be out on August 13th. You can find more. Paul has a great website, paulspear.com, S-P-E-E-R.com, and he's also on Facebook. So look him up, support great music. And, Paul, thank you again for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Well, you're very welcome. Thank you, Lori. It's been a great time.
All right, this is Tornado Warning. We'll be back in just a moment.
right. That was the amazing Paul Spear and Tornado Warning. And just to recap on that, Paul has just had a amazing musical career, 2 Emmys. He's Grammy nominated. He's worked on over 300 albums as a producer. His album, Ax Inferno, will be available the 13th of August, and I just encourage you to go to paulspear.com and support great music. Again, there was a lot of depth to that album from front to back. It was absolutely just amazing. But now we're going to check in with two of my favorite guys. I play their music all the time, Science, Jim and Justin. They've been on the road. They have a tour that started this summer, and we're catching up with them on the road, and they tell me they're in Montana. Are you guys there?
Yeah, this is Justin. Jim's driving right now, so I'm going to do a little bit of chatting because we're literally on the road.
You're literally on the road. Well, so how's the tour going?
It's going really, really well. So now we're in like the second phase of it. We've crisscrossed the United States. We started in Seattle in late June and made it all the way across to New York and back. And now we're sort of on a Mountain West. Idaho, Montana, Eastern Washington next week, of course.
Wow. Well, what's it been like?
This stage of the tour, it's the two of us, and we've got Jim's dog, Mortimer. He's our mascot. And it's been pretty hot, but we joked around when we originally left Seattle that it was the last rain we were going to see for a while. But it's rained, it rained almost every single day. Thunderstorms in Nebraska and we got to the East Coast. It rained pretty hard, and now it's like crisp and dry and beautiful in Montana.
Great. Well, I've heard there's a heat wave going on back east, so you're lucky you didn't run into with those thunderstorms in Nebraska, like tornadoes or something. We were just talking to Paul Spear about that, tornadoes in the south. But if when you're in Nebraska and you're going across the plains, who knows what kind of weather you guys could hit.
Yeah, exactly. And we've been really, really lucky. It's been a great trip weather-wise. We were sort of ahead of the heat, and then everything's going real smooth. Knock on wood, I suppose, but it's going so far terrific.
Well, what has the audiences been like?
So you know, whenever you get outside of your home market and you're sort of out of your comfort zone, you never really know. You can't really set your watch to what a show is going to be like, and so sometimes you'll go in with expectations, and you'll be totally surprised. We just played a show last night in Republic, Washington, and it was our first time in Republic, and we were blown away at how much enthusiasm they have for live music, and how many people had checked us out before they came out to the show. It's a terrific venue, and it was one of those stops. I had no idea what was going to happen or going into it, and it turned out to be a really awesome night.
Mm-hmm. Well, are you finding that most people have some recognition of your music, or are most people doing like they did in Republic and kind of finding you out beforehand, or how are they getting to know you?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. When we played in Brooklyn, we were over in New York there, and there were definitely a couple of people that came up and chatted with us and said, "Oh, we've got family in Seattle," and they told us, word of mouth wise, sort of come check you guys out because you're awesome, and then that was really neat. But also, I think people that go to venues regularly and look at the calendar, I think are really good about doing a bit of homework and saying, hey, I checked out the band that's coming up, and I really liked it, so here I am.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, in Seattle, everybody knows who you are. You guys are all over the place here. People are very familiar with you. I play the Seattle song all the time. And so I was hoping that would translate as you went east and that people were going to, you know, appreciate great music, which is, you know, what we always hope, that it translates across state lines. And I'm glad that you're finding that out. How are you and Jim holding up being together so much?
Oh, we're doing great. Yesterday was Jim's birthday. And so we're just touring along. But both of us we're really built for touring and really our brains are and we're really geared for the road. We really love it out here. So for us, it's the hard part's all the scheduling and planning before you get in the van. But once we're out, it's just driving and playing guitar, and it's, you know, it doesn't get much easier than that.
Well, that's really what every musician really lives for, because now you guys are just playing your music.
Yeah, exactly. It's like we get an opportunity to really pursue and do what we love, and I couldn't imagine being in an office in back in Seattle. So much road out there.
Now, so are you playing somewhere tonight or tomorrow, or where's your next stop?
Tonight, so we're just outside of Missoula right now, and we're headed toward Butte, Montana. We're going to play at Headframe Spirits, a distillery today, tonight, and then we're going to be in Montana for a little bit. And we start heading back and wrap everything up sort of in the Western Washington area, like the 28th of July.
Of July, okay. And then you're going to be in Spokane, right?
Yep, exactly. On Thursday, we're going to play Zola in Spokane.
Okay, Thursday, Zola in Spokane. Well, that's not very far. That's just
a
couple
just
days from now.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So you'll be Zola in Spokane on Thursday, and then you wrap up. Where will you be July 28th? What's your last stop?
So our very last stop is the Mason County Fair in Shelton, Washington.
Okay.
So we do a few days in Montana
here.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. it's good in the Shelton area. We're gonna.
Go ahead.
No. I was gonna say we're headed that way. That Saturday, the 27th, we're gonna play at a wedding. We have a good friend that's getting married. They wanted us to come and play their wedding, so we're gonna do that. And then the very next day, the county fair, and then a couple days off to rest up.
Yeah, well, I would imagine your family's probably looking forward to seeing you after being on this road trip, and then just a couple days to rest up, and then I'm sure you'll be hitting it again in the Seattle area.
Oh yeah, yeah, and it's really good. The one thing that is difficult from the road is we're working on our next album, and we've got a significant amount of it all done, but it's just once we get back to be able to have that time and focus and energy to really get working towards that. It's hard to manage that stuff from the road.
Mm-hmm. Have you been writing while you're on the road?
Yeah. Well, we actually we debuted a newer song that we just finished. We finished it on the road last week, and we played it for the first time last night. We'll probably play it again today. So that's been really cool, and we've got another couple that are just about to be start making their way into the live performance as well.
Great. And then, when you get back, then you guys can kind of work out all the other little details, I guess, so to speak, of being off the road, maybe concentrate more on then, like you said, putting that next album together. I'm really looking forward to the next album. I think I've played my first album of yours. I'm almost worn it all out.
Oh, great, great. Yeah, the next one's going to be, we're really excited about it. It's going to be, 10 songs, full length. The way we previewed some of the stuff the other night when we were just sort of had a little downtime, and it's really, really coming together the way that we want it to. So it's pretty exciting.
Great. Well, has there been any stop that you've been surprised or had an experience that you can share that you didn't see coming, or that was you weren't familiar with that area but it made an impression on you?
Definitely last night in Republic. I think we had a terrific show in Brooklyn when we were on the East Coast. Lots of people came out. There was a great blog that made us it was the acoustic concert of the week, and that was really a pleasant surprise. There were a lot of people at the show that were really supportive, and we played really well, and it sounded great. And it was kind of one of those perfect scenarios where it just had a great tour day.
Great, that's awesome. Makes for great memories on top of everything else.
Exactly.
All right, well, I'm going to let you guys go so you can keep driving. People can go to scienceseattle.com and keep up with where you're going to be next. I'm going to play some of your music, and I will try to see you Thursday night in Spokane at Zola. And I'm sure I'll see you around. I usually see you guys pretty much frequently anyway. So But as you know, I'm a huge supporter. I play your music all the time. I peddle your CDs to all my friends, and then they become little internet stalkers to you guys as well. So all your little stalkers probably started from me.
Thank you so much for the support, Lori. I did want to mention one other thing, if there's quick time. And that's we're going to be playing in the main stage at HempFest in Seattle on the 17th of August.
Ooh,
and
that's big.
And we're going to do that show with a full band. It'll be our surprise debut of a four-piece Science. So that's definitely going to be a rockin' show.
Nice. So on the 17th at HempFest, you guys are going to be on the main stage. And you're going to have...
At 2 in the afternoon.
At 2?
Yep, 2 in the afternoon.
Oh, that's big. We definitely want to get that out to everybody as well, because
HempFest is
a big deal.
Yeah, it's going to be a great show. And we've already done a couple... we've gotten together and done some rehearsal with the full band, and it's definitely... we're really, really pretty charged up about the show.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Well, I will try to be at that one as well. So 17th HempFest in Seattle, people come from all over the world to go to HempFest. There's some amazing music, 2 o'clock on the main stage. Science will be on there, and then 17th at Zola in Spokane. And then you can find out more information where they're coming near you at scienceseattle.com, right?
Exactly.
All right. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
Keep having fun. And really be careful on the road, because it's dangerous out there.
Yeah, no problem at all. Thank you so much. And on behalf of Jim and Mortimer and myself, we really appreciate everything you do and giving us a chance to be on and share our music. And thank you for all your support.
Oh, no problem. And happy birthday to Jim.
Okay, happy birthday, Jim. He says thank you. We'll talk soon, and hopefully we'll see you Thursday in Spokane.
Sounds good. All right, you guys take it easy.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. All right, that was literally Justin and Jim on the road in Montana, and they are Science, and they are just a great band from Seattle. I'm going to play one of their songs that I play pretty frequently, the Seattle song from them, and you can go to scienceseattle.com, find out more information. Again, go to paulspear.com and hear his brand new album, Ax Inferno. Science, they were on the PBS Road Trip Nation. They were a featured band on PBS, and they've had amazing success in the Seattle area, and this is their first nationwide tour, and so catching up, and they're still talking, and their dog's still alive, and you know, they're so great friends and making music. So that is really great to hear, because we all know we've been on road trips before. We know how those can turn out. By the time you get back, you're usually not talking, but they are talking, and great for them. So I'm going to leave you with the Seattle song by Science. Check them out at scienceseattle.com. And again, thank you to Emmy Award winner, Grammy nominee, and just a genius musician, Paul Spear. And be sure to support great music, paulspear.com. This is the Seattle song.
Americanos too. I drink just about Starbucks just won't do.
I don't.